For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. It's just me right now, Chris. Renalio is finishing up his bowling. We might have some other people joining us here soon, possibly Markeen. I'm having interesting issues with my speaker right now. Hopefully everybody can hear me. I cannot hear myself out of my right ear, only out of my left ear. So that's fun. We were cleaning up the basement for the weekend because it's party time around the pool. But yeah, so hopefully you guys, everybody had a good Memorial weekend. Not over yet, obviously, but the baseball games are open over for the weekend, so we figured we'd do this show tonight. See, we already have a couple questions there. All right, thank you, Alex. Weird. I cannot hear anything out of my right ear from the headphones. Whatever. That's not going to stop me from talking about baseball. So, yeah, pretty good week overall on the farm outside of Toledo, but we'll get into that. I guess we'll answer these questions right away off the bat. Dan, why has Colt Keith not played on Saturday and Sunday? He has a fever. He's sick. I think there may be something going around in the Erie clubhouse. I'm not 100% positive about that, but I thought that Sawyer Griffin Long was supposed to start. And then they had Adam come in and do a bullpen start. And yeah, I don't know if it's COVID or what, but yeah, he's fine. Otherwise, he's not hurt and he hasn't been promoted. It's just the boring old illness. But yeah, hopefully that clears up any worries about Colt Keith. We can talk a little bit about the Tigers, can't we? I suppose that was an awfully fun weekend series. We got a couple games where you get disappointed in the bullpen. The bullpen's been so good all year, and then they come up to lead. But the offense right now, it doesn't feel like the Tigers are ever out of it, right? It's really fun. And we were commenting about this in the Discord, just that the general quality of the plate appearances for the last couple of weeks has just been outstanding. You watch, you just feel like Riley Green, he may not get a hit, but he's going to see 7-8 pitches. And same goes with McKinstry. Same goes with Ferguson right now. Madu has been great. That grand slam today was awesome. But it's a lot of fun when the Tigers are playing fairly well. That crowd today was spectacular. It's been a while since we've seen some crowds like that, right? Yeah, it's fun talking about the Tigers these days. And you do feel pretty good about some possibilities of reinforcements coming down the line. Maybe not Justin Henry Molloy, as we had hoped. We can talk about that in a second. But I know some people are clamoring for maybe Colt Keith make the double jump. And Rick Kay says right there, Colt Keith has to be the number one prospect by a mile at this point. I think guys called that before the season. Yeah, this is where Raj gets to take his victory lap, because he called Colt Keith the top prospect in the Tiger system last July. And it took me until after the season to hop on board there. But yeah, he's a very talented hitter. Right now, his defense at third base he would be like one of the three worst defenders in Major League Baseball just by some of the basic metrics. But it'd be playable. It's not like a complete disaster where you have to move him off the position immediately. And he's going to hit. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of, he's really aggressive in the strike zone. So there may be a little bit of kind of a Nick Castellanos type of offensive profile where he's not going to walk a ton, but he won't. It won't be a Willie Castro, Victor Reyes issue where he's making too much contact for his own good. He's going to hit the ball hard and he's going to do some damage. But the pattern with Colt Keith, at least throughout the minors, has been he struggles for 2-3 weeks, maybe a month. Not necessarily struggles, but just finds his feet when he goes to a new level and then it takes off. So if and when we see him in Detroit, I would just tell people to pump the brakes a little bit, let him find his footing, and then he'll go. But let me see. We got some more questions here. Not questions. We got Alex. Alex says, you have to give credit to Scott Harris. A great pickup at five when it comes to McKinstry. I never would have guessed that he would be this good. I don't think anybody would have. What was he, like 1-for-50 or something? Something outrageous. And the thing that cracks me up about that is it just makes me wonder, not wonder, but marvel at how good Dodgers are. They were able to just give McKinstry away. Hey, we got Martine joining us. Here's a new face for you guys. Welcome to the screen. That's how you go.
Hello, can you hear me? This is
Yeah. Can you hear me?
It's all right. All
right.
And yeah, it's
Martin.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't particularly. I'm not a stickler for pronouncing it like that.
Thanks for popping in.
I'll see what I can do. Thank God I cleaned my room.
Yeah, we got all those books up there. I'm hearing a little bit of an echo. I don't know.
I could fix that. Give me like 2 seconds.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, like I said, Riley will be joining us soon, but he's found a passion in bowling lately. It gives him peace of mind. A little bit like the dude. And so he sent me a message at 9:15 that he was on the fourth frame of his final round. So I assume he'll be here in the next 10 minutes. So. But yeah, I was just talking at the people about the Tigers this weekend, how fun that was. Just watch them out, go out there and play really quality baseball against a division opponent.
Yep. I got to watch some of the games there a little bit. I didn't really focus on them. Cool. Sucks.
Yeah.
But I have watched a bit. And yes, it's fun seeing them beat the White Sox. And they're in second place in the Central, I believe. Correct?
I'm a game behind the Twins because the Twins lost.
A game behind the Twins. Yeah. See how long that lasts. I don't
know. Yeah. The Rangers is going to be a really big test because the Rangers have a fantastic offense this year. And you're not necessarily getting the best arms from the Tigers, but we'll see how it goes. And Nathan Eovaldi has had a really great season so far. But I was just talking about the Tigers' approach at the plate has been really outstanding for 3 weeks now. So
yeah,
I feel like they're going to compete.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, there was something I wanted to bring up, which is Javi's K-person has been absolute nonsense. So he's what? How many games into the season is it now? 47 games into the season I'm looking at in FanGraphs right now. And back when it was about the 30 game mark, I did a thing with a couple spreadsheets where I pulled up basically every 30 game span in Javi's career. And then I like at least like a decent amount, right? And then I tried to see, hey, where is this guy's like, what is the rate at which he hit or which he's had these kind of key percentages before? Like how obscene is this, right? Mm-hmm. And it's two standard deviations from the mean, so that's like about a 2.35% chance of happening, which like is plausible, right? He's done it before, but it's one of those things where it's I'm gonna give it time, and he's sustaining it. So
yeah, it's a really bizarre season from him because I think he might have the second or third lowest strikeout rate on the team. It's 18.3%, 18.5%, something like that.
Yeah, let me actually look at that because that's an interesting point. Is that okay?
But he's hitting for almost no power. The ISO is like 0.65, 0.065. It's just not the sort of player I would have expected Javi Baez to be for the Tigers. But he came up big today with put the ball in play and scored the tying run, which Tim Anderson couldn't corral it. That helps. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I just would have imagined Javi always being like a 25 to 30 strikeout guy with power. And now he's turned into Nick Madrigal or something. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it's not been terribly effective. His WRC plus is not great. But
I think it's below.
It's bad. It's bad. It's worse. Right now, it's worse than last season's, actually. Yeah. He's still destroying the defense defensively, by the way.
I haven't checked. The last time I looked, I think he was still tough, dude, but like outs above average. So
yeah, I know. Last time I looked, he was 100th percentile. He was like skulled last season. Oh, no, he's 99th. He's crushing it.
Yeah, so there's still something there. It's just, it was a, I don't know, month ago, 3 weeks ago, it felt like he was finding it. He had like opposite field home runs, hitting hurts of power up stuff, and then it left again. But fortunately, everybody else seems to be picking up the slack. It's power is kind of the last remaining thing the team needs right now. Not the last remaining thing, but they get on base a ton. They couldn't cash in much today for our position other than the Badu grand slam.
Yeah. I didn't watch today's game.
All right, there you go. It was a good one. It was.
It must have been a good one. Okay, so it goes, Meadows is the lowest, but that doesn't count. And then it goes, yeah, so he has the third lowest. He has a lower strikeout percentage than Torque, which Torque's peripherals.
Yeah, all the expected, he's 30 points lower in every expected category.
But it's exactly what I thought would happen. It's like that rise up because I said this before and I said this last season as well, is like his approach was far too good to not translate the major league level. It's a mechanical thing, I think. If you looked at like his swing decisions and like the fact that he was seeing a lot of pitches per plate appearance was just, it's a really good sign to me. Like, I don't care that he was like not hitting balls because you can fix him. Mm-hmm. So that's.
Yeah, I think it seems like he has made some adjustments. His plate appearance has been great. He's been taking a lot of walk. It's, again, with him, it's like the final step is just putting the ball in the fence a little bit more. And that probably will come with time. They've been making progress. Yeah, it's hard to complain about a lot of stuff with the team right now. You can find things. Austin's the ton, and Dick Rogers has been struggling. Abania has went through that brutal stretch, but with McKinstry and Green and Torque and Badu playing, it's been enough. But yeah, this is, yeah, Mitch said today, 1-for-12 with runners in score position. If that gets improved long-term, more winning.
Oh, that'll go up. That'll go up.
Yeah, that's what I said on the show the other day, is if you keep getting on base, you're going to get more runs by the ball.
It's, yeah,
just going to happen. The ball's going to find the grass or the seats. But I don't know if you paid a ton of attention to the minor this week, but.
And not this week. No, I have been looking at stuff. Like, my main thing is I've been looking at Parker Meadows because I want to know how he's doing. And of course, Cold Keith is being Cold Keith.
Yeah. So we can get into it a little bit. I'll start with Toledo.
I can look at stuff while you do that, though.
It's the weird thing about Toledo is, I mean, it's weird. It's just been such a brutal month. They're 6-18 in May this year. They were doing well. And then basically Justin Henry Molloy stopped hitting, and Parker Meadows and Andre Lipsius haven't been producing. And that's basically the offense for them. They had one home run all week as a team. Went 1-5 against Rochester. Couple solid weeks. Donnie Sands has been picking things up a bit, which I've been a little bit critical. I don't like his swing, but he's been producing. He went 8-for-18 this week with a couple doubles. Tyler Devin with 7-for-27 with a couple doubles. Corey Joyce 5-for-17 with a couple doubles and steal. But yeah, like I said, no home runs. The only home run was from Jermaine Palacios, who's hitting, I think, 190, but has 6 or 7 home runs. But yeah, Molloy went 2-for-17 with 5 walks and 7 strikeouts. Meadows 5-for-20, no extra base hits and 3 walks. Lipsius 3-for-20 with no extra base hits and 3 walks. It just, yeah, the offense was not producing this week. And one thing we've consistently talked about on the show, pitching there is not particularly special. Although Reese Olson had his second straight really good outing, which, you know, it happened the same day as Joey Wentz struggles again. And so people are starting to like, hey, call him up. And so that's definitely going to be a discussion point, I think, because
it's worth considering, but.
Yeah, and the thing is right now, they don't have really another option on the 40-man other than Reese Olson. So if they've had to do something, Joey Wentz just can't get any outs. That we've talked before on, like, maybe they could move Tyler Alexander. He's not doing terribly well. Mason Engler is getting 8 home runs in 25 innings. Not great. It's like him, but I don't know if you could start him either.
But I don't know, because I'd also, I said it's worth considering, but I still wouldn't call him up right now.
Yeah.
I don't like those numbers. Those numbers are not it.
Yeah, overall in the season, he was really rough until the last 2 starts.
Yeah, he is getting BABIP, but also 370 something. That's not sustainable. But give him time. I think he's still like adjusting to that, which is okay. And he's still a hell of a prospect and such. We'll give him time and may come to that as well. What I'm really excited about is Kerry Carpenter coming back, because that dude he's a beast.
Yeah, that's huge. That's what I was just talking about. The Tigers, that kind of the last missing link right now for the offense is power. Well, Kerry Carpenter could be that guy who gives you the pop, right?
He will be that guy. I'm calling.
So, yeah, he came back Friday and went 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts, I think, which is whatever. You know, it hasn't played in a month. And then today he's got his first plate appearance again. But, again, just finding his feet. And then he came up with an RBI single, I think, later in the game. Probably walked. He actually skipped the game, came back to Detroit to work on his throwing a little bit. I think that's what we found out, right? He got injured. Ran into a wall, making a really nice catch. People thought it was from hitting the wall, but apparently it was from the throw after that.
Oh.
But they've been rehabbing it. And so he's there in Toledo. So unless there's a setback, he'll probably be in Detroit a week to 10 days. So that's going to be a boon to the offense. Now, I don't know how you work him in now with the way Badu is playing. I guess it's just going to cut into Vierling and Maton's playing time some more because they haven't been doing much.
Yeah, probably. I'm not a Badu believer, but he is playing well, so he's going to get the playing time.
He's walking as much as he's striking out. They're both like 14-15%. Power has been there for a couple games now. Is he going to be this good sustainably? I doubt it. But then I don't think he's going to be hitting 390. Give the guys playing time when they're hot. Zach Short has been playing well, so give him a little bit more playing time. Play him on their. Yeah, Alex asks, who do you think gets it down when Carpenter returns? At this point, it would probably be Abanya?
Yeah, Abanya is what I was going to say as well.
It could be Maton or Bjorn.
I know, it's probably Abanya's though, because he does. I think he needs confidence, probably. At least that's what a manager and the GM are going to think, probably, is let him come down there.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, like Abanya's is, you don't want to say, well, I mean, he is. He's replaceable, right? Like, he's a replacement level player. He got off to a really nice start, has not played well over the last week or so. He's been unlucky too, but. It's not a guy you invest a ton in to get, right? They find him as a minor league free agent. I think it would probably be him. We'll see. But yeah, it was definitely nice to get Carpenter back. And you can, if anybody wants to, you can go see Olsen's last two starts. We've got him up, put him on our YouTube page. You can see how pitched he's. The same issues are still there. The fastball does not get swing conditions for him. But boy, his changeup was super effective the other day. I think he got 9 swings on against his changeup, and they were 8 whiffs. It was like an 89%. Whiff rate on that, and then 67 CSW percentage. So the changeup really good. The slider looks like it's a little tighter now. He's locating it better off the plate. So he picked some things up. I don't think he's an Alex Lang style reliever, not as good as Alex Lang, but a reliever who's going to rely heavily on off speed and breaking balls rather than his fastball. But as we said, you may get a start there by default. So trying to think what else. Nobody else was rehabbing, I don't think, in Toledo this week.
I'm not the person to ask.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, so, I mean.
I did see.
I should be paying more attention, but.
You got school, right?
Yeah, I did exams. But this, look, that last week was my last full week of school. So scope is hitting significantly better right now than he ever was last season. So there's that.
Well, yeah, and that's, he came up with a big, I guess technically a cyclone. I don't know when he drove the ball to center, really drove it and got Torkelson to third that set up for the air hot cyclone. That kind of just to put forth like a little meta conversation here. I was thinking about how people have been really critical of Scope, like for all season. People were critical of McKinstry at the beginning, but the fans of Detroit, I think, are really pretty good. If you're a player and you start producing, you're showing effort and you're producing, or at least hitting the ball hard, I think that we forgive people pretty quickly.
So, yeah.
Scope's hitting the ball hard now, let's play him. I think people are cool like that. So I think it's the next fan base.
I'll say it. I think people are also very quick to overreact in like the sense like if a player has a good game, suddenly they're like the messiah of a franchise the next game. And then it swings a lot. It's volatile, just like baseball itself. Yeah. But can't blame them. It is what it is.
Yeah,
not everybody's going to have the patience to wait 60 games and then be like, all right, here's what I think.
Yeah, that's, I think, the biggest difference between people who work in baseball, actual managers and coaches and stuff, fans, coaches. It takes a long time for managers and coaches to give up on guys. Unless you're Renato Nunez or whoever it was. Who was the first baseman they had last year? That Renato Nunez? I've forgotten his name, but they gave up on him pretty quickly. Even though
I don't remember either. Like Cole Keith isn't in AAA. The jump from AA to AAA isn't that large anyways. So I see no real issue with keeping him in Erie for a while.
Yeah. That's one of the things we talked about is there really isn't, like you said, there's not a huge difference in the competition level between AA. You're going to find a couple more veteran pitchers in AAA, guys who've been in the big leagues and didn't quite stick. But no,
yeah, exactly. The idea here, I think, is at least with Cold Keith, right, this season, the question that I had for him coming into this minor league season is like, the biggest jump in the minor leagues is IA to double A. Like, that's a massive jump. It's the biggest jump that you're going to get other than going to the major leagues. So if he can hang around and hit well consistently for an entire season and then maybe a stretch later down the line, in AAA, there you go. You're setting yourself up for next season, hopefully. Like right now he's doing that, but I think Harris's thought process is like, I'm just going to let him hang in there because that's what he's here to do. No sense like moving him. Let's just see if he can be consistent.
Yeah, I mean, there are the two things that I think there. The one, we talked about it before, where the minor league system is split into two halves, and the team that has the best record at the end of the first half makes the playoff at the end of the year. So they will keep a guy at a level they have in the past, at least, if they're playing meaningful games, because they think that means something to the players for them to play in these games where your bets actually have, hey, if we win this, we get to go to the playoffs. So they like that atmosphere of playing meaningful games. So they may keep Cork there for another 3-4 weeks. They did it with Kerry Carpenter last year. Now, Kerry Carpenter at this time last year had 18 home runs in AA. He was hitting like 370. It was absurd, right? He had no business being at the level anymore, but Erie was trying to make the playoffs for the first time since 2005. And so they kept him there until Erie was out of it, and then they moved him up. And so I think they could be doing that with Keith. Also, there's the fact that they do have Justin Henry and Lloyd playing third every day at Toledo. And would they rather just have these two guys playing every day at third base at a level that the difference isn't huge?
Negligible. It's negligible.
Yeah. Or would they, do they want to try to shoehorn both of those guys in the same team and start moving them around the diamond a bunch? I think probably better for them both to be getting regular reps at third base.
Exactly. Yeah. Because the main thing with, I think, Colt Keith Laxon is his defensive ability. So if you can get him and so give him those reps at third base and see if you can make him like serviceable. Cause
yeah.
This is like when you start really thinking about the future, I would really like Colt Keith to be a capable third base. Like that would be really great. Cause then we don't have to worry about balancing him and torque out, because if he ended up being like a first baseman, that's a problem. Cause like, how do you balance that? Right. So if he can keep getting those reps and get good at that, that makes it much, it makes things a lot easier. So it makes sense to keep both of them playing third where a level is negligible, like you said.
Yeah. So we can move down to Erie now. There were a couple of questions higher up in the chat that I wanted to get to. They did pertain to Erie. So here's one. My guy, Todd Howard, he wrote, Gage Workman's offensive profile is much better than last year, and he's playing less. I'm guessing it's because of strike zone emphasis. You think they'll work him in more, or this will be the norm? So actually, they did work him in more. He played 5 games this week, which is unusual, but he also played his first 2 ever games in the outfield. So I think so did Wenzel Perez this week. So they're starting to get these guys a little bit more time in the outfield. Now, it's for different reasons, I think. We can discuss it a little bit. But.
Right. So Gage Workman, last season, I was notably not a fan of him. And the biggest reason for that is last season, AA, 515 plate appearances, 40% K percent. That is atrocious. There's no sugarcoating. That is, no, I don't want to deal with that. And especially with a 6.6 walk rate, like that is not good. And like he had this high BABIP and all these issues. Looking at his 2023 numbers, the main thing worth noting is not only has the K percent gone down, but his walk rate's gone up as well. And his power number, his numbers overall just looking better. And I think it's a really good sign that his walks are going up in that sense. And like, now I see the appeal of this like super athletic player. And like, now I'm seeing like, okay, he's gotten his walks and his strikeouts to like a point where like, it's acceptable. Like it's almost good. I still think the K percent is too high, but like for what he is, like, I like him as a player much, much more now with these adjustments.
Yeah. And so what's interesting is he got up to a really great start this year. First 3 weeks of the season, he was looking really good. And then he fell off the table again. And that's when he stopped playing. He was playing once or twice a week. And from what we can figure, that kind of comes from the top. That Gage Workman is not necessarily a Scott Harris type of player. Now, like, that doesn't mean that they won't work with him and get him to keep playing. I don't think they've given up on him. But it's more like there are certain kinds of players where they basically say, we're going to give you these opportunities and you have to produce or else we're not going to play you more.
Exactly. That what you said right there is Gage Workman is not at all a Scott Harris type of player. He is not. same. He's like a Javi type. Javi and Gage Workman is a really good comparison. They're like they're a very similar type of player. And in a similar way, I think that story, like, you can draw a parallel between the two in the sense that, like, they both had to sit out and then they both started getting going after a bit again. And I think that, and I know that the Javi benching was like Hinch directly doing it, but like that whole mentality of produce and have discipline or whatever, and you're going to control the strike zone because if you don't, we're not going to play you. Like, striking that mentality into a whole, not just into a few players, but like striking that entire mentality into the farm system, it's just going to build better hitters from now on. Because discipline is very, you cannot teach discipline. There's this quote from Moneyball from the book that I really love. That's if we wanted to teach hitters discipline, we'd have to start when they were babies. Like, that's exactly the point where you have to ingrain it. And so starting that as soon as possible is so important to me.
We got Riley over here. Yeah, no. Uh-oh.
Oh,
did I add?
Oh, no.
You sound like.
Your mic is not.
Hey, man.
Yeah, you sound like a robot.
Yeah.
Sorry. That was fantastic. That was good. No, that's it. Fantastic. I get Workman pulled up like crazy. And when he's hot, he scares the hell. I always say this. He scares the hell out of opposing candidates. They, like, when he's making contact, it's always hard. It's hard. It's going somewhere. It's doing damage. But he swings and misses so much. That is really frustrating, I think, with them. And I know that they've worked with him intently on altering his swing a little bit, but there's only so much you can do. So, Raj the Robot. Do you want me to add you again, Raj? Nod your head. All right. There we go. Oh, you're muted. Yeah, I can hear you. You're a little quiet, though.
I'm a little quiet?
Oh, now you're good. You're good.
Okay.
Better.
Perfect. Yeah, that works.
All right. So we talked a little bit about the Tigers. We talked a little bit about Mud Hens. I don't know if you had any comments about either of those teams when we were just about to get into Erie.
Really quick, I'm not sure what the hell is going on with the offense in Erie. That's really my only concern because the catchers this week, it was only really Knapp and Sands that did anything. Toledo. I'm sorry. Toledo. And Justin Henry Malloy's been struggling. Parker Meadows has been okay, but against... What? I don't know. What was this, the former Tiger Revenge Tour or something that happened?
Oh, God, yeah.
It was between Mars Garcia, Mazzara, Hill.
Derek Hill.
Yeah, Gerson Moreno.
Anthony Castro was on that team.
I should have said.
Willie Peralta.
Willie Peralta's on that team, too?
Yeah.
Oh, bro. Oh, no.
Like five or six former Tigers.
Oh, we're getting corked.
Yeah, Willie... No, that's one of those things where it was it's a cluster of ex-Tiger 4A players. Somebody asked me how bowling was. I hate bowling. Can I even annoy me because the team took forever. The other team took forever. When they go to bowl, they got to go to the bathroom somehow. You couldn't go bathroom before. You couldn't go get a cigarette before. Come on.
I think bowling maybe shakes everything loose.
Apparently. But yeah, I bowled really good. I bowled pretty good before I went bowling. I went to my brother's for a barbecue and I did a little bit of cornhole. And Stan, I'm gonna stand to ask if we have a general email address. Yes, we do. I'm gonna post it here in just a sec.
Yeah. Sorry, Stan. I saw that question and I was like, I think so. I don't know it. Raj would know. But it remember show up.
I got nothing.
But as far as Tigers go, great series win, great Riley Green. So just continues to be what he is, a franchise player, and they're taking advantage of a crappy division.
Yep.
Yep. It was nice, sweet. The comebacks were fun, and the crowd was great. And so, yeah, it feels good to have baseball to care about, the big leagues. And we were touching a little bit on where help might come from. We did talk about Carpenter coming back, but.
Yes, we did.
Scooble is probably not super far away, like maybe another month, but.
We'll see. I'm curious about Scoobs. I don't know.
And then you've got Meadows, who knows, but he's technically, I think, coming off the 60-day in about 8-9 days.
I don't know, but I'm not the most positive about Meadows' outlook.
Yeah, I'm not expecting anything they get from him now. It just feels like a bonus.
Exactly.
But again, that's another situation where we've seen these players that people were upset with and kind of written off. And then suddenly, oh, wow, E-Rod last year was gone forever and was okay. And this year he's been really good for the most
part. Yeah, well, he's like mentioned in like Cy Young contenders for a bit.
Yeah, he's been pitching that huge pitch today to get a double play in the inning. So I mean, we're heading down to Erie with 4-2 this week. We were just talking about Gage Workman playing time.
Yes, he turned it around. I actually like him. It's strong, but like he's a player that I am not like, nope, that I can see being a piece.
And I mentioned it before. So this week was the first time that we've seen Wenzel Perez and Gage Workman in the outfield. Pro baseball. Wenzel Perez, they had to do it because he basically had to get second base. It's rough to watch because he could be a 30-foot throw and he spikes it in the dirt or throws it over the first base. It's just in his head. And he's always been an above-average runner and a pretty good athlete, so they threw him out in center field and he looked okay out there. It takes reps to get good at that, but he's an above-average athlete and Workman is a plus athlete, so it makes sense to get these guys out the field.
I didn't actually know that Wenzel Perez is actually having those issues. So yeah, throw him out there. Dude, he can play at the very least. He can play a corner outfield, like average to like a little above average.
Hey, blood right. Oh, Roger's got the
Sounders.
There we go.
Ball is gone.
I hope blood right.
All time.
Can you use these as tax write-offs? Somehow.
These super chats?
Yeah, not. Blood Red's always giving us money.
I'm not really sure, but if you want to send in a couple questions, if you want to do a super chat with us, go for it. It goes back into the website. For example, we went out to Grand Rapids on Saturday, which we'll get to shortly, but those comes in there. So,
you got to tell me so I can show up with you guys on the White Cavs game.
Yeah, that's on me. That was my poll.
I probably couldn't have shown up, so you're good. But Warren's like at least try to set something up, yo.
That was we'll get to that when we get to the webinar, but we wanted to see Troy Melton make his debut and saw some other things, but so Erie ended up with a 4-2 week against a pretty good Somerset team. Like, I don't think the pitching on Somerset is as good as it was last year, but still some pretty, Jason Dominguez is still there. Austin Wells is there. Everton Pereira is there. They've got a good offense and Erie got some really good performances from the starters and a lot of offense. So that was fun. Did they start 0-2 in the series? I'm looking.
Oh, Erie or?
No, Erie didn't start 0-2. I think it was West Michigan. But Erie did go 4-2. And the big game was, I want to say Thursday night, where they were down 5-0 and then down 6-3 and came back and won 7-6. And it was Wenzel Perez hitting a 2-run homer that ended up, it wasn't a walk-off, but it was the go-ahead runs. And that's kicked them off the weekend. And then they went absolutely bonkers on Saturday night. 17 runs, I think 6 home runs. It's in a game that didn't have Colt Pete or Dylan Dingler in it. They hit 6 home runs. I don't know if there's anybody you wanted to highlight, Raj, or you want me to run down some numbers for you?
The only one, in terms of you just talked about Wenzel Perez making the adjustment to the outfield, which was, I think, overdue, at least in my opinion, because, the yips. Again, Trey Cruz just turned in another solid week at OPS over close to 1,000, 3 walks at 3 strikeouts. And again, being aggressive in counts, and he continues to be steady. And out of all the bats this week, outside of Cole Keith and Diogo Rincones, he had a really good week.
Yep. 9-for-25, a couple doubles, I think, and a homer. A homer, a double, 3 walks. Yeah. That's a guy that he's the opposite of Gage Workman, where we had written him off last year. And he's really, I think, found himself back in favor of the organization this year. And he's playing really well. So, That's been a positive development for sure.
Yeah, and like I said, when I talked to him via text about asking about the adjustments he made and just what he's done with his hands, it's been different. But the fact he went out the outfield, that's cool with me, but he had the family background. So that, again, his dad played in center field. His grandfather also played, I want to say right field or left field for Houston. I can't remember. But
maybe somebody in the-
Yeah, somebody will chat. If anybody remembers what Jose Cruz, when he played for the Houston Astros in the 80s, and of course we have the internet, my Dean's already looking at it probably there, but nevertheless.
I don't know who this guy is. All right. Houston?
Yeah, he was in Houston in the 80s. It's Trey Cruz.
Well, this is the, he, okay. I'm going to make you feel old. He started playing before my dad was born.
When was your dad born?
73.
All right. Yeah. That makes sense. One thing, I saw Blood Right donated, but he also made a comment, and we should address it because it's funny. We'd show it here. Blood Right. I think I pressed the show.
Yeah.
There we go. I love Riley Green, but every time he gets close to third, I burst out laughing. Has anyone else noticed this?
Yeah. I've done it. Because when he's going to third, he always is like this. He was like a deer headlights. He's almost like he's going to put the brake like a cartoon, like while he's tired, to put it on the brakes before he falls off the bridge or something. And it's hilarious. I noticed that the other day.
We've talked about it ever since we saw him in the minors, where he's like an average to above average runner. Like he'll post kind of averages time first in the outfield. I think he got like almost a 90th percentile sprint speed, but he looks slow because he runs like an old cowboy. He's like bow-legged, and it doesn't make it. He's got an odd gait, and it doesn't look right. But yeah, he's an orthodox player, but boy, is he playing well.
And as far as Eric De La Rosa, by the way, back in Erie, that was another, that's not really big development, if you will, but he has been in the development, on the development list. It's almost like they were trying to reform him or something. I'm not really sure.
I'm not entirely sure how much development is actually going on with the players in the development list. I know that they're allowed to take batting practice and take infield and outfield and all that stuff. They just can't play the games. So I don't know if it's just keeping a stack of players, need them, or if they're really like, hey, this is a guy we can work with. And about like Ronnie Garcia was on that and him off. He pitched last week at Toledo. Yeah. But it is nice to see some of these guys back playing. Been a while.
Yeah. And on the pitching side, last week in Erie again, we talked about Rant Hurdler having another solid week. Ty Madden, it was all right. He had a couple walks, but
yeah, he battled.
Sawyer Gibson, he battled a little bit, but Sawyer Gibson Long
actually love that name.
Yeah.
I can't.
But this,
I cannot, dude. Sorry.
And it's honestly, yeah, like the Flores was 5 innings and no runs, only 1 strikeout, 5 innings of scoreless. That's fine. Gibson Long, 5 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts. Herder, 5 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts.
I think Flores was under 60 pitches too, which is efficiency.
Yo, Gibson Long, though, that he's actually like pitching good. That exit is nice.
Yeah. Well, so he's, I compared a little bit to Alex Fiedo because he's got a really good slider at times, and his changeup can get outs too. It's his fastball hit hard, and he struggles, I think, a little bit against lefties. But yeah, he's been pitching well enough that I wouldn't be shocked if he gets up to Toledo before long. But I think it's a situation where if they're going to pull up an arm, I don't think they particularly care if they're in Toledo or Erie. They're just going to take the guy they think is ready.
Yeah, especially at this point, too, with all the injuries. I think we talked about this off air, Chris, about how many injuries have been going on in Toledo. It really an alarm, like a, I don't want to say alarming rate, but it is.
A lot of relievers are hurt.
Yeah, a lot of eyebrows are raised on that, too. And it's 4 have hit the IL, or I think 5 have hit the IL this month, I believe, something to that effect.
I don't know when Rosenthal went on the IL, but he was on there. Del Pozo was on the IL. Kirvin Castro is on the 60-day now. Keith Hembree, who they just picked up from the IL. So, yeah, they're grabbing all these arms out of Doe and Ellich. And then somebody asked a question about Lael Lockhart.
Yeah.
Who Erie grabbed him and then put him on the developmental list. He's not on the active roster in Erie just yet. But, I don't know, that was an interesting acquisition. A guy with really ugly numbers in the bullpen right now. But, well, as a starter in high A and pitched decently last year, I want to say.
Yeah, for the Great Lakes, yeah.
Our buddy Brian Zagowski said that Lockhart was the best defensive first baseman for a prep player he'd ever seen, a high school first baseman, which doesn't mean a whole lot, but that's kind of
help. Yeah, there was something about his scouting report, too, how well he did offensively, too. It was a pretty good offensive with the bat. Erie, so the one thing I wanted to mention, too, I forgot to mention this, is so tomorrow, usually there's an off day. Toledo does play tomorrow at Indianapolis. So out of all the teams that are playing tomorrow across the Tiger system, Toledo is the only one playing. Everybody else will continue on the normal schedule with Mondays off except for Toledo.
I think Toledo probably has Tuesday off, don't they?
I think so, yeah. I believe they do.
Yeah. So sometimes you see that on holiday weekend where they'll play like, hey, spend your Memorial Day.
Tomorrow I have nothing and then the Tigers aren't playing and I'm angry.
I think he's playing tomorrow. Yeah. 1 o'clock against Texas. Yeah.
Are they? That's not what my. Oh my God. I can't read. All right.
Go to the Tigers.
No, there you go.
Positive.
Yeah. Actually, to go on a tangent, Jose Cruz played mostly left field in Houston.
Mostly. Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, unless I'm reading this wrong, which is possible because I don't use Baseball Reference like ever, but I'm pretty sure that's what it says. So I'm looking.
Yeah. I'd buy it.
Yeah. No, I buy it too, considering the ages, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, the very first question we had right before you showed up about Colt Keith, why wasn't he playing today and yesterday? And I told people he's sick, a little under the weather. He still had a great week when he was healthy. What did he go 7 for 16 with a double and 3 walks. Yeah, he's hitting at an elite rate right now. So hopefully he gets better soon. Get these 3 days off and is back to hitting hard line drives and fly balls everywhere.
Yeah. So yeah, it was funny because I had some people on Twitter DM me, is Colt Keith okay? I was just like, I looked and was thinking about it. And so then I just I messaged my source and so he had a fever. So that was the only thing that was going to keep him out. There's nothing else.
Fair.
Colt Keith.
Yeah.
So
I got a fever. Yeah.
No. And I can't let that hurt his numbers.
So yeah, I don't know if there's anything else to cover there in Erie. We mentioned all the starters. Montero had a decent start. Man had a decent start today with the bullpen day. They brought Adam Wolt out of the bullpen. Yeah. He pitched pretty well, but he ran out of gas there in the third inning. Yeah, it was, I really expect to win bullpen games, and they did give it away toward the end. But still, 4-2 week, pretty good. But still in first place. So that's key. That's why those guys are down there competing. But we can drop down to the Midwest, West Michigan.
Yep.
Who also had a good week. They were the ones that started 0-2 and then finished the week with 4 straight wins against a pretty good Lake County team. Lake County is always good because Cleveland always has interesting prospects. But they.
Thank you. Yeah. Javi Baez in our chat said the Tigers have Thursday off and they play tomorrow. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Javi Baez, for coming to our chat.
Speaking of Lake County was very. When we saw him on Saturday, it was not the. We mentioned we saw. Friday. Ethan Hankins. I remember all this hype about him, and he just kind of, I don't know, man. He did not look good to me.
No, he didn't. Ethan Hankins was heading into his high school senior season. It was the 2018 draft, so the one when the Tigers took Casey Mize. And Hankins was so good as a junior on the showcase circuit and kind of had an epic performance against Korea in a World Baseball. Not the World Baseball Classic, but in international play, that people were discussing him as an actual possibility as 1-1, which has never happened for a right-handed high school pitcher.
And really? That's surprising.
Yeah, it's always an injury risk. There's only been, I think, one or two high school lefties that went first overall. Brian Taylor.
You mean lefties? Okay.
No, there's never been a high school righty, though. There have actually been a couple lefties, but never been a high school righty.
Really? Even back in the medieval ages, they would... Wow. Honestly, that shocks me. I didn't know they knew that. With what I know about how dumb they were back then, like that honestly is that baffles me. I should give them more credit, but not too much.
So the first one being David Clyde was the first one, the lefty, high school lefty, drafted by the Texas Rangers at 33.
Oh, is that the dude that they made debut at 18 or whatever? Is that?
I think
okay.
He went right.
Yeah, and just completely ruined him.
Yeah. Yeah, we're dumb. It's funny. I've done a lot of research on draft stuff through Baseball Reference. That's a great place to go if you want to look at old
draft information. Yeah,
And basically, anything before 1980, nobody had any idea what they were doing drafting. The Tigers had some fans who like Dodgers, but there were so many, what the hell were you guys doing? We took 7 straight high school shortstops. All right. None of them made the majors. Okay. I don't know what the plan was here, but in any event, that's neither here nor there. Yeah. Whitecaps. So yeah, we can discuss that. We went out there on Friday night. Raj got to join Dan Hasty in the booth, which is always fun. I haven't gone back and listened to that because that was the long for Milton inning.
Yeah. That was for me, if I agree myself in the booth, I did okay. I rambled a little bit too much. And I said Olafigan's name wrong, I think, once.
Oh.
Which is, and I knew it has, like, I was really working on trying to say it correctly. And Dan asked me on the spot about some of the, because I did the mock draft for Fansided. So I thought my mock draft, I had Dylan Cruz going to the Tigers at 3 because the Pirates are going to do something wacky and just surprise everybody at number 1. But as far as what we saw down in West Michigan, I came away, it was the first time since the trade for Allen.
Logan Allen.
And he looked really good. I think he had three hits. And he had a really good catch, too. It was a Lakeland on Lakeland crime where he robbed Jake Fox, who he played against in high school in Lakeland. And I was totally, I had no idea of that until on Twitter when we posted that clip. But I came away impressed with his glove, his hat. Again, is he a dude? I don't know. I don't really think so at this point, but it was good to see him. But the bats I came away impressed with was Roberto Campos, who had a single, and he also had a double, and it was an opposite field double where he just almost, I want to say he came off the end of the bat, like not in the barrel of the bat, but just like, it felt like it was like on the handle, and he just smoked it. And I thought he did a really good job hitting the ball, and got to continue to be impressed with Campos.
Yeah. So Allen, that first one, he went 7-for-18 this week with a home run, 3 walks and 8 strikeouts. Yeah. I think he's just a really quality minor league baseball player. He's improved that team a great deal just by being really well-rounded. Like you said, I don't know if there's less tool there that will carry him to the big leagues, and he may struggle once he gets to Double A, but he's made the Whitecaps a better team. So that was fun to watch. Oh, Tycott wants to see a link to your mock draft.
I can do that.
But yeah, Campos, it was funny. Campos went, I think what I was just looking, 3-for-14 this week. 3-for-14. We saw 2 of his hits, but he also walked 4 times to 1 strikeout. And that is the main thing that continues to surprise me with Campos for being such a young dude. He has a really good idea of the strike zone. Like he will chase occasionally on a breaking ball low below the zone or away. But you're not getting him with a fastball above the zone. You're not getting him with a fastball inside. If anything, he just needs to work on which pitches to swing at in the zone. But he makes hard contact to all fields. Like Roger's saying, it was a hard double down the right field line. They were playing 15 feet off the line because right-handers don't hit there, right? He does. And so, yeah, the overall numbers don't look spectacular. But every time we watch him play, I come away really impressed. Tigers have a pretty good one there. We did go out, though, to see Troy Melton. And he only pitched 1 2/3 innings, unfortunately.
No.
You can also see that on our Tigers Minor League Report YouTube
page. Great commentary.
His first inning, 11, 12 pitches, I think. Almost all of them, I think he threw one ball.
Right. Oh, that's so first 12 pitches. It was first 12 pitches were all.
Yeah. And he was 95 to 98. Mostly 96, 97. Hit 98 a couple times.
Solid.
Dropped down to 95 a couple times. He flashed a pretty good changeup once. Got his first strikeout on a changeup. And then broke out some nice kind of 79, 81 mile an hour breaking balls there in the second inning. But he just lost the strike zone, particularly with his fastball. And what really hurt him was he got a comebacker right to him and picked it up. Not right to him. It was to his right, I think, near the third baseman. But he would melt in play. He picked it up and just kind of threw a sinker to first base that got by. And then it was man on second, third with nobody out instead of a man on second with one out. And he ended up hitting his pitch limit, 30 pitches in that inning because he lost the strike zone. So it was a bummer, but we flashes of the talent, right? The big arm, showed some secondaries.
And the one thing about his start too, and by the way, Jerry's joined us too as well. Jerry.
Yeah, I'll add Jerry.
I just added Jerry to the stream. We'll get to Jerry here in a second. No, I came away with the fact that I think almost exclusively all 11 pitches were fastballs. And then he started throwing that slider, which was kind of a short slider. Didn't do much at first, but started getting a little better. But I still think he has a reliever profile risk to him.
Yeah.
Because of the big arm is there. The spin, looked at the spin rate later, ended up being pretty solid. But it's going to take some time.
It's a starter's body, but he's 6'4", well-built. the delivery seems okay. Like, it's not super violent and uncoordinated and anything like that. I just think he just lost his release point. It seemed like he kept missing fastballs either up and away or down and in. Like, he couldn't find the happy medium. But yeah, I agree. Like, it reminds me of, where he kind of reminds me of Ryan Perry in terms of his size and his fastball. And Ryan Perry was probably long before Martin was paying attention to baseball, but
certainly before I was paying attention to baseball.
That makes me very sad. Not for you, just for my own mortality. You weren't missing anything. Anyway, we can bring
you. Hey, man, 06 is a great year. I don't know what you're talking about.
I do want to move on to what Dan and I were talking, or we were talking to Dan Hasey about, was how so Dan mentioned this, and it was on, I think it's on the website too, where he ended up talking to Jack O'Loughlin, and he didn't want to ask him. He's like, so didn't want to ask him about the pitching streak and he's the inning streak. He's like, I don't want to. It's kind of a superstitions thing. And he had another good week. Another strong start for him. He's trying to figure things out. He's hitting 96 on a gun, which was blew us away a little bit.
Yeah, he's got 20 consecutive scoreless innings. And we joked about it a couple weeks ago because one of them was like, you gave up like 10 hits, but somehow didn't give up a run. But yeah, you know, we watched the last couple starts. And I know we talked to Scout last year who really liked him, but Scout knew him from Scout head coach in Australia. So he knew him from that. But yeah, he's 6'5", I think, 6'3", somewhere. He's a big kid, strong, and he's always had pretty good feel to spin the ball. I think his best pitch, probably like lower curveball, which is not necessarily what you want. But he can throw a decent slider, and the fastball is getting in the low 90s, like Raj said, and touching the mid-90s. So yeah, he becomes a pretty interesting player. He's always going to be free, I think. So I'm curious if we see him in Erie later this year. There's kind of some similarities to Brant Herder to me in terms of big bodied lefty who just getting guys out.
Yeah, I definitely see the similarities with that too. It's just a matter of, can he get more swing and miss stuff on his fastball? And let's see with Hurdler, if they're going to advance at the next level, is if they have to get that kind of, and I haven't seen enough of Jack to make the decision about the swing and miss stuff, but it's a good thing, because again, it's one of those things you and I talked about off, like, they have the Erie pitching coach this year in West Michigan, and it's paying dividends. You can see that firsthand with some of their they're getting out of performances in terms of, for example, like Garrett Berhan, who by the way had a decent start, he hit 3 walks in a start, but there's a difference in how they're approaching pitching this year in West Michigan versus last year, I think.
Yeah, it's Dan Riffleball is the pitching coach at Erie last year. And yeah, we've seen Burhan, I think his stuff is up a little bit. Like you said, Montero's stuff was looking good. He got promoted. Lachlan's stuff is looking good. Yeah, so I think even Will Kell has looked okay occasionally. Kind of hit and miss with him, but yeah, it's paying dividends for him. And so the pitching was solid this week. The offense, we talked about Allen. Josh Crouch is back to hitting like over 300. He's hitting like he did last year.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Josh Crouch, but I couldn't figure out a way to bring him up.
Yeah, it's one of those companies we talked about earlier, Martin, was the jump from high A to double A.
He
just looked lost in double A. And
yeah, because I remember him really well, because last year I have a friend who works for the Whitecaps, and he was like, what are your thoughts on Josh Crouch? And I was like, who the heck is that? And then I see this dude who's like hitting 130 WRC plus. And I'm like, wait, who is this guy? But yeah.
Got to do with it, Erie. That's all in his school.
Yeah. But which is going to be tough. That's, again, same thing with Colt Keith. So give him time and we'll see.
But yeah, there's some other solid performances in West Michigan. Chris Myers continues to hit the Toledo product. He's not playing every game, but when he plays, he produces. He's got, I think he might have the highest WRC plus in the organization right now.
You know, yeah, I can check that if you want me to.
Danny Soretti had a good week. He had struggled a little bit, but he went 6-for-18 with 3 doubles, solid week. Ryan Kreidler. We saw Ryan Kreidler in his first rehab appearance. He had 3 hits that night, I think.
Yeah, he had 3 hits. Yeah.
Looks like he went 3-for-9, though he saw all 3 of his hits, but a double, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. It's nice to see him. And that double was a hustle double. Like, it was a gaffer, and he really ran it out, which was nice to see because he's down there for his knee. So, he didn't seem to be bothered by it at all. He maybe he wasn't running 100%, but he wasn't favoring it, I don't think.
Yeah, I was scared. I was not scared, but just kind of, ooh. He went on that knee there, and I was when he slid, it was kind of like, ooh. I was slightly nervous, but the wrap-up West Michigan is I did wanted to bring Jerry on to talk about his Joey Wentz article because he posted it on Saturday on Joey Wentz's start. Wentz did not look good, but he pointed out something relatively quickly. And Jerry, first and foremost, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. We've been enjoying your player profiles. Mm-hmm. And in terms of like his release point, how much, when you see this and when you graph it out, how much of a difference does that release point make for him to throw strikes? Because it sounds like a really obvious question, but it's just a matter of is it just really a matter of inches, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. The graph I posted on there was zoomed in to give people a better view of the differences between the 2 years, but even still zoomed out, it's a fairly significant thing. What it looked like to me last year when at the arm slot he was using last year, he was able to locate that fastball more so it would be inside to right-handed hitters. He had a lot of that going on. And this year he seems to just be focusing at the heart of the plate, which hitters are going to feast on that. I think last year he gave up 2 home runs and neither were on the fastball. This year he's already given up 9 and 5 of them have been on the fastball.
Yeah, it's not that cutter either, too, right? The cutter, that was a pitch that really worked for him last year, especially getting on the inside part of the plate. And I've been actually really surprised he has not been able to establish that at all.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of players are probably recognizing this and just sitting there waiting for that fastball to come right across the plate. And just when you don't have to, or when you can wait for the pitch you want, you're not going to swing at these pitches that are going to be outside. You're just going to wait and focus on that. And it's hurting.
Yeah, but that's a really good point because, if you remember last year, it was that combination of throwing the fastball inside and the cutter inside. And it was just eating right-handed hitters up. And then he'd come back with the slow curve or the changeup. And he was kind of going. What makes you wonder is, okay, what's causing this deviation? What's the problem? Is there an injury there? Is there an alteration with mechanics? What's happened? I don't know. Do you have any theories on that?
I don't know. I was talking to Brandon Day a little bit about it too. And he said that they've been playing with his arm slot a bit since Tommy John. So this could just be a part of that, which I hope not because it's been 9 starts, So you think they would be able to correct whatever issues they have with that, or at least get them back to the previous arm slot.
Yeah, because that's where last year when he started throwing that cutter, that was most successful about it was that they were playing with that as early as last year, too. And this was when he was coming off his injury, so I'm not sure if it worked for them then, why would they change it now? It doesn't make any sense to me.
And I don't want to jump to conclusions, Ritter, but they brought in Jesse Lund, who was a pitch whisperer, the guy at Iowa, and probably he has a lot of ideas for a lot of different pitchers, and I don't know. They may have found something that they thought they could improve with Wentz and it's not quite clicking, or maybe not. I don't know. Like I said, I'm jumping to conclusions there, but I would think with the pitching coaches and the pitching analysts, you're going to always try to help these pitchers get better.
Right. So what I found really interesting was that he gained extra extension and he also gained 1.5 miles at velocity. So you would think that between the two of them, it would be a harder pitch to hit, but if he's not locating it where he needs to, like he was last year, that's an issue.
Yeah, we see that all up and down throughout the minors. We talked about Reese Olson earlier, the guy who's got visually pretty good stuff and the numbers back it up, but too often it's right over the heart of the plate and it gets bombed. And that's big leagues is very hard. Hard for pitchers really good and the hitters are really good. And if you make a mistake, they're going to punish you. And if you make a mistake over the heart of the plate, they're going to punish you maximally.
And another interesting thing, too, his cutter spin rate's actually up a lot. It's up almost 2,400 compared to the 2,200 from last year. And I know.
What about the active spin is what I was going to bring up.
Oh, wow. That is interesting.
Yeah.
His curveball saw some great spin as well. And the weird thing is his arm slot changed for all of his pitches, it seemed. But it's really just the fastball that's getting clobbered.
I was going to note, but the one thing is I was just looking at his release points and the only, and I mean, it's only 0.3 feet of a difference, but it is like the average release point of his four seam is 0.3 feet, like higher than on average than all his other pitches. So maybe that's enough to make a difference, but I'm not entirely sure.
No, I think you're on to something with that, Jerry, but the terms of, and both you guys are discussing this at a point where it's even like the changeup, though, it's the one thing that's interesting to me that he's not getting, he's getting good, they're not hitting his changeup. Last year was sometimes they would hit that pitch hard, but they haven't hit that pitch yet either. So it just could be, if they're making, to me, send Olsen up for Wentz doesn't make a lot of sense. I know that he's had two good starts in a row, but it has to be a matter of consistency. Let's breeze through Lakeland pretty quick, Chris, because I feel bad. I feel bad because every week I feel like Lakeland. It's kind of like an afterthought, but it's not much going on.
I think Carlos Pellegrin is a guy that maybe people might want to know a little bit about. He's another international guy. He's one of the two Cubans they got. I think they got him the same year they got Lazaro Benitez, but Pellegrin is a bigger, more athletic player who's starting to perform a little bit. So he's a guy just kind of keep an eye on. I think he went 6-for-17 this week. Jose De La Cruz hit a home run this week. Christian Santana came back from the IL. He didn't do terribly well, but he did hit a home run. I'm trying to look. Are you 1-for-16?
Yeah, that's what I got. Yeah.
1-for-16, 5 walks, 9 strikeouts, the home run. His swing is still troublesome. Abel Bastidas made his A-ball debut this week with just 2-for-16, but he did have a triple and only 2 strikeouts, no walks. So they're folding some more interesting guys in there gradually. Tyler Johnson, the unsigned or undrafted free agent out of Clifton, Carolina, hit his first pro home run today. So that was fun for him. He's a first baseman. I'm trying to think. Anybody else? Peyton Graham, you know, homer, 6-for-21. Stolen base. He's been playing better lately. I think he was under 200 for most of the year, but it moved a little bit. But
goes to say Cole Patton had a pretty good start too.
Yeah, he was their 17th rounder last year.
Yeah, out of Villanova. Yeah,
Villanova. Yeah, but yeah, and so I think their Chance Kirby was rehabbing down there. Manuel Sequeira went on the IL, so you know, we're trying to keep abreast of these player movement things. Joe Miller had a decent relief outing of one of the starters. Max Green had a 2-inning outing, I think, the other day. So they're kind of ramp them up a little bit. But
progress. Yeah, 7. And Seth Gerringer. Can't even say his name.
Who is it?
Seth, the free agent they signed out of Florida.
Gunther? Coach Sean Gunther?
Yeah, Gunther. Yeah, Gunther. Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, he's rehabbing now. They're still.
Yeah, and like I said, Kirby is just, it remains not the terribly exciting game, but they did. Yeah, they went 3-3 this week. Fortunately, they're at Daytona, which doesn't have the StatCast data. I think it might be the only team in the Florida State League that doesn't.
Yeah.
Which is annoying because that we had the Santana home run, we had the De La Cruz home run, we had the Grand home run. Hey, let's get some data on these, but nope, sorry. But
is it Lake County too? Lake County doesn't have any.
Lake County doesn't have broadcast.
Yeah.
And they didn't send any radio people to West Michigan for the week. We could have just been camping out in the visitors' radio booth and calling the game. But we were discussing doing that last year, I think.
Yeah.
Calling the game live just to run.
But yeah, just to maybe possibly, just to, as Dan said, we could do something like that if we wanted to. But no, it's overall, yeah, Lakeland's going to get more interesting, I think, next month. I think you're going to start seeing some, as soon as some guys come back from the IL, they have also too been in terms of arm wise, I think have 2 or 3 pitchers on the IL right now.
Yeah. We had one question in the, below the tweet, but it was basically about like, how do we think about what do we think about the rule changes here? I don't know if you have any opinion on that. As they apply it, this is basically the rules we saw in the minors last year. So it's no big deal.
There's not really, it's,
if we're going to talk about the rules, I think the rule changes. Like, I don't watch nearly as much minor league ball as you two. I think a lot more about the majors and but the changes that I have seen have all been extremely positive.
Yeah.
The rules are great.
The was going to say, the biggest one I like so far is the no shift rule.
It's that like, honestly surprises me because that's the rule that I feel the most indifferent about. I don't know. I think it takes away from the game in some ways, and I think it adds to the game in some ways. I think it's, to me, it's very similar to the DH, the universal DH rule, where I think it takes away from some aspects, but it adds to some aspects of the game as well. So in that sense, it's just a matter of preference. But I think the biggest thing for me is like the pitch clock and the bigger bases has just been such a powerful combination to make the game more entertaining. And I'm really curious, like, what feeling and like other stuff is going to look like in terms of like value and how much teams abuse it. And like, I really want to see what this looks like in 2 to 3 and even 5 years into the future. Like, where are we at? Are we going to get like an explosion as big as like we've seen before? And is it going to continue to increase like this? Like, hopefully that's the idea.
Yeah. One thing that I'm fascinated by, and I haven't seen if anybody has really dug deep into this yet, but there have been whispers. We talked about on the show last Thursday about there are certain pitchers who seem to be really affected by the pitch clock. Pitchers who were really good last year, like Alek Manoah and Corbin Burnes, who are struggling this year. Now, Manoah's struggling mightily, but Burnes is having trouble this year, and they have had to, they've upped their pitch time from 21 seconds to 18 or 16, a big difference. And I don't know if anybody's done a deep dive on that or not, but that's kind of fascinating to me because I could see how that would bother somebody. If you're used to your whole routine and like you've got your, I get the ball and I take 5 deep breaths or something like that. Now you can only take 3. And it seems to be affecting some guys, but maybe that's just noise.
Adapt or die.
Yeah.
That's
the one. There is one real change we've seen in the minors. Is that you, Gary?
All right. You're good. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention, and some people have seen it, we posted a few videos of this, about the challenge system that is available now in AAA. It was down in high A last year, or low A, but you couldn't really see it because not many of those games are 12-eyes. But the challenge system has been interesting. I don't know if you guys have all seen that, and what do you think about it?
I like it.
I was going to say that's actually the one rule change that interests me in all of baseball is that challenge system. I feel like that could be manipulated more than anything from really smart front offices and managers.
What do you mean by that? Can you give me like a specific examples? Because I'm curious what you mean.
They could challenge all sorts of play, all sorts of calls and really change the outcome of a game. If they challenge a pitch that is a 2-2, in a 2-2 count, that was called a strike. They can challenge it and get it changed into a ball. Now it's a pull count and the hitter could make that. Get a better pitch, get the hit.
Well, that's the entire purpose, is to make it more fair, right? And to like make those situations less egregious or not egregious at all. Like, I don't think that adds any kind of controversy.
I think it does. In terms of controversy, you know what would have been cool today if the instant replay would have been used for the double play today in Erie. I don't know if anybody saw that or not, but it was a very bad call. They got him at, so it was in the 9th inning, Erie had a runner on, and I think it was, I want to say, who hit the ball grounder too short, got him at second. The ball is clearly pulled off the bag when they throw the ball at first. His foot was even on the bag. They called it out. And the first base coach was ejected because he was like, he basically pointed out, hey, his foot wasn't on the bag. And that instant replay would have been nice there. I'd rather have something like that. The pitch call stuff is cool. I do like that, but don't get me wrong. But I would have loved to have seen a challenge there. Well, for a teammate.
I think the big league. Yeah. And I also think the biggest issue for that in the minor leagues is that logistically, it's so much harder to set up for a minor league game. Like, it's not worth it. Because you need so many cameras and angles to make that work. Because baseball is not a sport that is just not reasonable to have a sure minor league game, mm-hmm. I think. Whereas like I think ironically, despite the technology being arguably more complicated for the like challenge system, like that's ironically way more portable and like logistically feasible to have it across the minors.
Yeah, because you've just lived, all the Hawkeye systems are already set up.
Exactly.
Got it all there. But yeah, so we've seen a couple of those. There was a fun one where Parker Meadows had a 10-pitch at bat and they called him out. challenged it, and that kicked off a rally. There was a game, I think the next game, I mentioned before, I want to say Omaha challenged 8 pitches and got 6 of them. So that ump was having a really bad day. Now, the only question is, okay, but you have the technology to get every single call and without taking the time to challenge, right?
Sure.
I do think the challenge thing is fun, but is it better to just get every single call right with the computer, or is it better to have players keep a little bit of that framing, human element, umpire aspect, and then have a fun challenge? Everybody's like, oh, what happened? It does seem fun, but I don't know if it's the best for baseball.
That's a really interesting and complicated issue. So I play tennis and I watch a lot of tennis.
Yeah.
And that has a lot of parallels. So like now, most tennis tournaments, if not all of the major ones, have switched completely to an automated system. And like personally, it hasn't made much of a difference to me. But I think in baseball, like, I guess it's more of an argument of like, how much does framing matter in terms of the challenge system? Because I think especially, I think right now, you have to keep the challenge system going for at least a couple of years. Because the thing is, with the way that the game is coached right now, switching to fully automated strike calls, I think, would screw over a lot of catchers. I think, because I don't know, I'm thinking of Jeff Mathis because of Foolish Baseball. But like, Jeff Mathis would not have been a high A player if, you know, automated strike zones existed, which is why I think that you need to soften that transition and start it with the challenge system where, hey, framing is still relevant. It's less relevant now, so we're going to focus on it less. But if that's your skill set, it still is useful. You're not going to screw them over. And then slowly you're going to be able to transition that way. You can start at like lowest levels and then slowly shift it up, and that'll be good. So I think that's the idea, I think. That's what you want to do. Now, if you want to keep framing, that's a whole nother issue, right? We're like, I think we could easily have gone on without robo-umps. Like, it's infuriating, but like, I think we could have gone.
Well, and I do wonder if baseball seems to be constantly more offense. If you want to do that, then you'll get rid of the catchers who can't hit a lick but are so good at framing. You start getting the Mike Piazzas of the world again, where guys are just like, hey, he's got a strong arm, he can catch the ball, and he hits a ton. Like, who cares if, you know, him pulling the ball and getting extra strikes for his pitchers? Yeah, that may be where they go eventually. But I do think that, Mark, I think you're right about a transition period is needed. There's so many teams. The framing is a relatively, or quantifying framing is a relatively new thing, like the last 10 years or so. And so teams have been trying to lean into that because it's super valuable. And to suddenly switch course might screw up some stuff.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I think the automated strike zone would have made it, and Edward's correct about that. Like, the call on Torkelson today was just, that was ridiculous. And it, do you also notice too that they have, well, strange enough, there's something pointed out a couple weeks ago, or actually earlier this week on Twitter, that Angel Hernandez has not umped a game since like early May.
Yeah, that was really funny.
I think he's got an injury. Back
in that injury? Yeah. I was back in. Gotcha. All right. I wasn't sure if it was something to do with anything else, but anyway, let's wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening to the Tiger Mildly Report podcast, and check out our latest. Well, tomorrow I'll have the weekly recap written out, of course, at TigersMLReport.com. Jerry, is there anything you got coming out this week?
I'm going to get another player profile uploaded tomorrow, but I think this one might be behind the Patreon.
All right. So we got some Patreon stuff coming up. So go to our Patreon if you want to subscribe, patreon.com/TigersMildlyReport. And if you haven't subscribed to our channel, please do Tiger's Mildly Report on YouTube. Yes.
I will have an article soon. I promise that. Exams are coming up. Like, if nothing else, I promise you that I will start working on my mid-season 3,000-word essay on every single player on the Tigers.
There you go.
Oh, and it's by the way, I just wanted to promote the book that we're doing. We did an interview with Roger Yoder, and if you want to get the book, Ultimate Tiger Series, Detroit Tigers, Michigan's favorite sports team, got a bunch of stats in it, and I'll be putting the link and the podcast that we had him on tomorrow for Memorial Day. So thank you, everyone who has served, and I really appreciate it, and we thank everybody who is listening, and we will talk to you later this week. Have a good week, everybody.
Yeah.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.